You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to yet another episode of Ravens Weekly. If you're still with us, thank you so much.
Do you remember when you and Jeff used to do it? I think you used to start off with episode and then whatever. Do you know what episode we're on?
We're on 150-something.
No.
140-something.
No, hang on, let me check just before I...
You've really thrown me off there.
Yeah, no, I know, but I just thought...
Yeah, you just thought you'd throw me off mid-flow.
No.
Don't worry, I know your games.
I think it's 132.
Oh, I was well off. It just feels like it's been
132, yeah.
132, that's still really good.
That is good.
That is still really good. Anyway, as I was saying, welcome to episode 132, if that's what you wanted, Josh.
Yep.
My name is Matt Hall, and the person who's already very rudely introduced himself is Josh Tindall. How are you, Josh?
Very good.
Good, good, good.
Now that's I know the episode number.
Now you know the
episode.
I think the population of Bromley can now rest and can now sleep tight tonight.
Because our two listeners.
Well, I was just going to say, the big news today is we've got a fan.
Yes!
We have a fan. Hopefully you can't hear it. I'm talking about an electric fan, which somewhat cools us down, by the way. Not an actual supporter in here. Well, we will have later because Roy Oliver will join us for Roy Remembers. But yeah, we've got a fan. So it is incredibly hot again today, especially in our lovely studio here. But anyway, we've got plenty coming up on the podcast for you. Let's start actually by giving a shout out to last week's podcast. If you haven't listened already, it's an action-packed episode with a brilliant interview courtesy of Josh, who caught up with Ben Crowhouse, who has been very impressive this season in the matches that he's played. Andy Woodman, of course, joined us, as well as Jamel, head of coaching at the Academy and under-21s manager. And of course, the man who we mentioned a few moments ago, Roy Oliver. And it's getting to the point, Josh, it's just not a podcast without Roy.
No, it's not. So if he ever goes away,
that's
on holiday,
it.
I think
we boycott. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay, I'll have to.
Is there anyone else with the first name beginning with R?
Can we get him on a phone to do an interview like that?
Like FaceTime.
Yeah.
If he's on the lounger.
Yeah.
With his shades on.
Having a pina colada.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a lilo somewhere hot. I can imagine Roy doing that with his sunglasses. But he'd have his carry bag with him.
And it wouldn't be Roy Remembers, it would be Roy's Relaxation.
Roy's Relaxation. Yeah. Roy's Retreat.
Yeah.
There we go. But anyway, enough of the fanboying of Roy Oliver, who we'll come on to later on. Do catch last week's episode if you haven't already. It's certainly one that's not to be missed. Now, as is often the tradition, we signed a player last Friday ahead of the match at Kidderminster and actually the other side of last week's podcast. So we're just catching up on it now. And that was Arabin Peppel, who joined on loan from Luton Town. He's a striker born in Kettering, has a really interesting background, actually. And it'll be good to get him on the podcast soon. And we'll certainly be doing that. Has represented Canada at various age groups, having moved out there at the age of 5. He joined on loan on Friday last week ahead of the match on a Saturday against Kidderminster. Wore the squad number 19. And actually, Josh, we'll talk about this more in the game, but got called into action a little bit earlier than expected.
Yeah, I mean, obviously no player wants to come onto the pitch and then get subbed off, but I think he wasn't ready, was he? He had one training session with us on Friday, got called into action, like you said, early on in the first half, and then rightly got subbed back off because obviously right now fitness isn't having fit players isn't really our... main positive at the minute, so
it's been difficult. It's been difficult.
So to keep him fit was priority on the day.
Surely we've got to have a period of good luck at some point in terms of injuries and players being available. Just moving on, you did have a catch up with Bim, didn't you, when he signed, which was a really interesting interview.
Yeah, it was, and obviously his background, like you said, is a unique one. He was born in Kettering and like you said, spent time in the Canadian Premier League and ended up playing for Grimsby last season as well. So
he did, yeah, in League Two. Well, Josh, let's hear your interview then with Arabin Pepple. Here it is.
Tim, welcome to Bromley Football Club. How's it feel to have signed?
Feels good. I'm just excited to get to sign, ready to play games.
And what have you made of the facility since you've been here?
The facilities are really good. They surprised me, really. They're everything I could ask for, really, just to put in my best.
And you've already met your new teammates, the coaching staff. How have you settled in?
Yeah, everyone was really nice and welcoming. And I just want to repay that now and just show what I can do.
Talk us through your career, because you've played your football, majority of your football, in Canada. And then you moved on to Luton Town. You were at Getafe as well.
Yeah.
So it's been a bit of a, gone around the place a little bit. So just give us a bit of an overview.
I was born in England, around Leicester. I was playing for Derby when I was 5. Then my family moved to Canada when I was 5. So I played in Canada. Signed my first pro in Canada at 16. Then I moved to Spain. When I was 18, I did a year at Getafe, moved back to Canada, played in Canada for another, 3 months, 4 months. Then I moved to Luton last year, then I did 6 months at Grimsby, then came back to Luton in January, and now I'm here. So yeah, been a belt.
And you mentioned that you spent some time at Grimsby. How was that to gain EFL experience?
Yeah, it was different from what I was used to. A bit of a culture shock and a bit of just an adaptation just from what I was used to in Canada. But any experience is a good experience, really.
And then you were named on the bench for Luton against Grimsby, weren't you, when you returned there?
Yeah.
How was that for you?
Yeah, it was good just to be... see the match day experience with Luton, and unfortunately the result didn't go our way that day, but it was just another good experience in the bank.
And what's the camp like over at Luton? Obviously they had a really good season last season. How was it for you to experience?
Yeah, it was a great experience just to kind of see at that level, just to see the preparation, what it's like, and then obviously what we experienced at Wembley, just to be around that and see the preparation that went into it and see the reward at the end. It was great, and everyone right there helping me just develop stuff like that. But I think it's now time for me to get games and just show what I've learned.
And for the supporters who don't know, how would you describe yourself as a player?
Physical, strong, fast, like to get in behind and just try my best.
And finally, how much are you looking forward to playing your football here?
I'm just looking forward to getting games and being here and just being around and just repaying the opportunity the gaffer's giving me here to play regularly, and just really excited to get started.
Josh, great to hear from Bim Pepple there, and a brilliant interview as always. Moving on then, our best of luck to Bim, by the way, and we look forward to seeing him feature more in a Bromley shirt as he continues his journey through his footballing career. The under-21s had a brilliant result last Friday as they beat AFC Dunstable 5-0 with two incredible finishes from Dylan Cave and Callum Corbin. Shannon Brown, Finn Roberts and Remy Onabanjo got the other goals. Congratulations to them. And, what a way to start the season, really.
Matt, have you seen the goals?
I haven't, no.
Well, you need to get on it. And anyone listening here that hasn't seen the goals...
What we should do, you've got a camera pointed at me. Should I just get the goals up and we could do a live reaction to these goals?
Yeah, we can do. I don't think anyone would watch. But
No one would watch. Unless
Josh and Matt's reaction to the under-21s goals.
Zero views. Unless someone's being punished, then they might watch it.
True, yeah.
That is true.
Someone will.
But anyway.
But worldies.
Well, it's brilliant. And, of course, great coverage from our media volunteers at the game as well. Shout out to each and every one of them.
Shout out. That was Will, Ollie and Luca.
Well done, team. Brilliant job.
Scott Tweed on the photos.
Fantastic stuff, guys. Well done. And, of course, the under-21s are back in action this Friday as we host Aldershot Town. And, of course, you can get the best of both worlds because Broomfield are showing the live beam back from Rochdale versus Bromley this Friday, the 25th of August. Kickoff 7:45. Bar is open from 4 p.m. come along and join fellow Raven supporters. Chairman Robin Stanton-Gleaves and CEO Mark Hammond are going to be there, and you'll have the opportunity to ask them questions on a kind of informal basis, and they'll be there to chat to the supporters as well, which will be really, really nice. So do come on down. You can register your place online via bromleyfc.co.uk. Now, Josh, time to talk about some rather sad news. And yeah. a lovely person, a brilliant footballer and a great character that has departed the relocating community stadium this week.
Yeah, sad to see Billy Bingham announce his retirement from full-time professional football. I mean, I think the timing of it has sort of come as a shock on it, but we sort of know that it's been building up and, you know, he's put in other things first, and so he should. It's his life. He can do what he wants with it, and yeah, if he's not feeling it anymore, then fair play.
Well, Billy turned 33 recently, and you know that obviously the next stage of his professional career away from football or away from playing professional football is of course in his mind and preparations for that, and we wish Billy all the very best. Genuinely, I remember the day Billy signed and we were talking about which squad number he was going to go for. He went for number 10 initially and then he transitioned to number 4. And the day Billy signed, he really just struck me as a real gentleman and someone that was going to be great for our football club. And I think it's fair to say he has been. He's been a big contributor to history being made in terms of the two playoff finishes and the FA Trophy win over the past few years, as well as putting in some fantastic performances, you know, in games and helping us get the wins. Handful of goals as well, which always helps. And, of course, a very memorable strike at home to Chesterfield at the back end of last season, which got us the result on the day and, of course, cemented our place in last season's playoffs where we made history yet again. So, Billy, just from all of us here, actually, I'm just going to mention, I went down to Raven's chat earlier to see how everybody was, and you've seen it online. The outpouring of emotion is there. Just what a class act Billy is on and off the pitch. He's always got time for everyone. And Josh, it's fair to say he was the same with all of us in the office as well.
Yeah, I mean, it took me by surprise when you told me that was his decision. And like you said, he's such a nice person as well. To lose someone like that is, you know, is going to be hard to fill. So yeah, it's disappointing. Obviously, on the pitch as a player, we need someone like Billy in the team. And I think from a fan's point, you can see it like that as well. And that's why he's been playing. I think he's played each game, I think, this season. So, you know, he's an important part of our team, and he's no longer going to be with us.
Well, it's a great shame, and we wish Billy all the very best in whatever's next for him, and all the very best to his family as well. And thank you, Billy, for all of the memories. And I know, especially, as I mentioned from the Ravens chat contingent earlier, they're very grateful to the contribution that he made to the club, and the character that he was and his relationship with the fans was certainly something for them to treasure. Best of luck, Billy, and he's already said he's not going to be a stranger and he will be visiting Hayes Lane, and we look forward to that whenever he decides to come down. Now, we talked about it earlier briefly, but Kidderminster Harry is away.
Yeah.
It was, and I'm just trying to get my words here. I think I've said it in the interview with Andy. It was a entertaining, interesting afternoon. I don't really know what to say. It had everything except a goal.
Yeah, it was, I'm surprised there wasn't a goal. And obviously, we were on the back foot for the majority of the game. We defended really well, though, to get that clean sheet. But yeah, like you said, had everything but the goal. We had injuries, two red cards, bookings, and yeah, it was dramatic. And I think going into the game, we probably, you know, would have seen a draw as a negative result, but I think how the game panned out, losing Sol early on, and obviously losing Cole as well, to come away with a clean sheet and a draw, you know, you can't really complain.
Gutted for Sol Kader. You look at what a week and just the contrast in emotions that you will have felt from Tuesday's game moving into Saturday. It just incredible, you know, scoring that goal on Tuesday night, man of the match award. on cloud nine to then, and actually started the game really well, was pressing, was energetic, was dynamic, which is everything we've come to expect of Sol Kader, and then to be taken off with that injury. And respecting Sol's privacy and his recovery, it's not a short-term injury, and unfortunately is the outlook at the moment. And unfortunately, Sol is going to be sidelined for a little bit, but he'll come back stronger. He's such a determined, and he's had to show that determination and patience to bide his time to get his chance in the first team. Am I right?
Yeah, he came back on, didn't he, when he got injured, and it looked horrific. Obviously, it happened right in front of me and you. We were in the press box. We had a good view of it, and when he went down the first time, there was immediately, you just saw no chance he's going to carry on, and came off, received a bit of treatment, and, you know, tried his best for the next couple of minutes to continue, because that is his mentality of, you know, he's taking his chance and he's not going to give it up lightly. But, you know, it was a horrific injury.
Well, best of luck to Sol, and he's still around the place. He's really picked up already with his recovery, and he's working really, really hard to get that underway. And of course, Huss, the physio, we've got to give him a shout out as well. He's been quite busy treating players recently, so big shout out to Huss and the physio and medical team at the club, and a best of luck to Sol as well. Obviously, the red card, Josh, didn't help our cause. I felt up until that point we were probably on the front foot, maybe a little bit more than Kidderminster.
Yeah, and I think Tuesday night Cole had a really good game. Obviously, he's missed the first couple of games of the season, played his first game against Willstone, and, you know, he put in a good performance. So it was disappointing to see him go off, and especially in the manner that the red card was handed out. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It doesn't help us with the injury list as well, but that's three games that he's going to miss now.
And it's unfortunate, like you say, he was playing well, you know, in the game before, and was playing well and winning his battles until he got sent off.
Yeah, I mean, I was keeping an eye on that particular battle that ended up, you know, him receiving the red card. But he's a solid defender, and people saw it on Tuesday night, and it was, just another shame.
Well, it really was. And anyway, talking about the positives from the game, and two words for you. Grant Smith.
Five more words for you.
Go on.
In the middle of our goal. Is that six words?
Wasn't he in the middle? Yes.
Six words. That's what I meant.
Fluffed it up a bit.
Especially with that pause as well.
Someone who did not fluff it up was Grant Smith, right? I mean, we particularly look, and I love the clip that you put up on Twitter of that, what was it, 30 seconds? Probably not even that. And he's made three top class saves. I love the second one. That's my favourite, with his legs, where he's stuck his legs out and prevented three certain goals. Let's get it right here.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think the third save was the standout one, just because, you know, you make the double save and he just didn't switch off, and straight away Kidderminster were back on to us, and it was a good strike. And, you know, you've got to make a top save to keep that one up.
Well, Grant Smith certainly showing why Andy Woodman signed him in that game. Made some great saves later on in the game as well. Congratulations to him. Congratulations also goes to Chin Akoli, who, of course, was one of the defenders who had to step up once Cole was sent off, and actually put in a great performance. So many crosses coming into the box. Him and Webster and the fellow defenders just dealt with it all really well. And I'm really pleased for Chin, who had a tough couple of opening games, but was absolutely phenomenal on Saturday. He didn't put a foot wrong, and he deserves that place in Team of the Week.
Yeah, he's a really good player, and he's that solid defender, a bit like Cole, that we need after Omar left. And I'm pleased that it's starting to work out for him. I know in pre-season he was I think it was against Crawley, where he had a really good game there as well. So yeah, it's good to see him show what he can do. And I remember when he first signed, I spoke to him, and he said before his interview, he was like, he felt at home already. And I think for a player to say that after, I think he was training with us for probably like a day, a couple of days, yeah, to say that straight away and to just feel that welcomed in from the get-go, I think that's probably helped him as well.
Well, we talked about goalkeepers a minute ago, and we're going to talk about goalkeepers a lot more now, because our guest star on this week's podcast is goalkeeping coach and head of goalkeeping at the football club, Brannan Daly. And we talked about all things from Grant Smith and Teddy Sharman-Lowe to goalkeepers of the past to our community goalkeeper session. Here's what Brannan had to say. You won't want to miss this one.
Brannan Daly, thank you for joining us on the podcast. How's the week been so far?
Take two, Josh. Nice.
We don't have to tell anyone that we have to do that.
I think
again.
Take two's being a bit kind there, but I'll sit back for a minute.
Yeah, I missed all the ones before. It's been good. Obviously, a good point away at Kidderminster with 10 men. And always nice when a goalkeeper sort of gets its plaudits. Played obviously really well on Saturday, Grant Smith did. So, yeah, good point there coming into this week, and then obviously heading into a big weekend, which is probably, I'm sure, at some point they're probably going to be busy. Hopefully not, but I'm sure they probably will at some point.
For those who don't know, could you describe your role at the club?
So I'm first team goalkeeper coach and head of goalkeeping, so oversee all the goalkeepers pretty much across the whole club, which is obviously, when I first originally joined, I was just with the first team. And then following that sort of first 13-game period where Andy come in and he brought me alongside of him, sort of taken over the role of sort of kind of overseeing everyone at the club, really, in terms of goalkeeping-wise. So, that's pretty much my role.
And what is your background? How did you get into football?
Interesting, really. I mean, I actually started playing on field when I was a real little boy, when I was probably 6 or 7. And then I think it was back then it seemed to be that sort of case of who wants to go in goal, put your hand up, or if you haven't got a goalkeeper, someone just gets picked. And I think being the big boy, I ended up getting in between the sticks when one of the boys got injured. So started playing in goal probably when I was about 9 or 10. Just played grassroots my whole life, and then a bit of a strange situation, really. I was 19 at the time, just starting uni, and I think I was playing in a pre-season friendly for Walton Casuals, and we played AFC Wimbledon, and an Arsenal goalkeeper coach come down called Jason Brown at the time, sort of ex-goalkeeper, he was at Blackburn for a while, and he introduced himself to me after the game, and he was just wearing full Arsenal kit, and I just thought, this is just some guy, like, he's just a diehard fan. Comes up to me and goes, "Oh, you're right." Introduced himself, "How you doing? What do you do?" and stuff like that. And I said, "Oh, yeah, I just started uni, a bit of afternoon stuff, do a lot of coaching alongside it." That's about it, really. "Why, what's up?" And he went, "Oh, yeah, I'm head of goalkeeping at Arsenal and the under 23s at the time, goalkeeper coach." I was like, "Oh, okay, fine." He's like, "Do you mind if I take your number?" I was like, "Yeah, okay, no problem." He's like, "Yeah, because we always need keepers coming in for training and stuff just to be extra bodies, essentially." And, got in the car, went home, and I thought, yeah, I'm never going to hear from that guy again. He was just being polite. 2 or 3 days later, he texts me, and I remember he texts me saying, "Oh, can you come in tomorrow and train with the under-23s? I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, fine." I went in, and then I was there for 3 years, training full-time. Had the pleasure of sort of being able to join in with the first team a few times under Arsene Wenger. Unai Emery then come in, and then obviously worked a lot with Freddie Ljungberg when he was the under-23s manager. So it's a bit of a strange one, really, and obviously that's how I come across and met Andy as well. So he obviously then come in when Jason left Arsenal. He come in as head of goalkeeping, then he was my goalkeeper coach at the time when I was playing. And then I stopped playing during COVID because the levels I was playing at, step 3 and 4, sort of on and off with the leagues, really. And then before you know it, I think I was coaching at Arsenal. I then transitioned from training to coaching in the academy, which I still do now, down at Hare End in Walthamstow. And then Andy got appointed, obviously, manager here. And I remember at the time, I'm in love with my golf. And I remember I was playing a golf course, quite a nice one, called the New Zealand Club. And I felt my wrist going on my watch, on the Apple Watch, and it said Andy Woodman. And obviously I'd seen a couple of hours before he'd been announced as Bromley manager. I thought, oh, here we go. He's going to want me to do one of two things. He's going to say, "Can you come in and coach? Or can you come in and just be a training keeper?" And in my head, I was kind of like, I don't know if I fancy any of them. But yeah, I didn't answer it. I was just stood over a putt at the time. And then another goalkeeper coach from Arsenal rang me and said, "Oh, has Andy spoke to you?" And I was like, "No, I had a missed call." He's like, "Okay, make sure you call him back." So he's obviously in the loop. I rang him back and he was like, oh, Bran, I need someone to come in for 2 weeks, literally 2 weeks, to be my goalkeeper coach, because I think he had someone else lined up at the time. And I was like, yeah, okay, be a good experience working at a senior level. And then 2 weeks, we obviously done all right, went on that little run in them 13 games. And then before you know it, it was like, yeah, can you do it to the end of the season? And then the end of the season come and it was like, yeah, do you want to be the first team goalkeeper coach? So that was kind of my introduction. Like I say, started football and now I've somehow ended up to here at my young age. So
that's really interesting, actually. So as a, you know, as a kid, you never really wanted to sort of get into football as a career, or was it just by chance that you just enjoyed it and it was just the people that you were sort of around and the opportunity just came up for you?
Yeah, do you know what? It was interesting. I don't want to say I didn't take it serious, football. I mean, I did. I remember every week sort of built up to the Sunday, go with my mates and play football and want to win. Always played in like the sort of top Surrey League, that sort of stuff, with Ashford Town, Spelfon Sports, Sunbury Circuit, wherever I was at, sort of my way over sort of Staines way. So always played for them top teams. I remember when I was 16, I made my debut playing Step 5, I think it was, for Bedfont Sports at the time, because my brother was there, and I think their first team was like, oh, we need a goalkeeper for the weekend or something like that. And I was like, oh, what about my brother? And I think I come down, and because naturally I'm quite loud, I remember my first session, I sort of went down and I was just screaming orders at these older men. And I think the manager went, yeah, that'll do for me. And I got chucked in at 16. I then went to Met Police and played for their youth team and 21s, and then eventually played for their first team for a while. But it was probably only until I was about 17 where I actually thought, do you know what, like, I'm not going to make it as a top-end goalkeeper, but I can actually go and play at a good non-league standard and also pick up a little bit of money. Before that, it was always just doing it just because I loved it, really.
And some of these things, what the story you've told there is really interesting. They just happen by chance. You've talked about various different chains of events there that have led you to where you are now. How would you assess your time here so far? As you said, you came back, it's been over 2 years now. It was on a temporary basis, and the impression you made on staff on and off the pitch was very, very good. And everyone was really pleased to see you carry on into that next year.
Yeah, good question, actually, because like I said, when he first rung me, I was a bit like, don't know if this is for me. But I thought, yeah, it'd be a good opportunity. And if I'm being brutally honest, I mean, I was playing Step 3 at the time, and obviously the leagues had stopped. And then when he rung up and asked, I actually didn't know the standard of the National League and the setup and the quality of the National League. So that was a real eye-opener for me. Obviously, I was doing my coaching at Arsenal and stuff like that. But that was a real eye-opener. And then obviously when I come down here, this stand was here in terms of where we're sat now, but it was only seats and inside was just rubble. And I remember then like kind of asking questions about what was going on in there, because we poked our heads in with Ardat sometimes, because I remember Andy saying, oh, this will be our first team coach's office and this will be that, and there'll be a gym there and there'll be change rooms here and classrooms there. And I thought, this is proper setup. So it kind of, when the opportunity come up in the summer and it was like, can you stay and stick around, straight away, like, I didn't even need to think or go home, speak to the missus or anything. I was like, yeah, straight away, this is for me. And like I say, 2 years down the road, obviously had some good success, obviously with the playoffs, FA Trophy and the playoffs. So then sort of seeing where this season goes now and takes us.
And you talk about that first period when you came in, it was during that COVID year, wasn't it? And I guess towards the end of that season, fans started to filter back into the stadiums, but it was an odd experience, wasn't it? With empty stadiums, it kind of felt like training matches, and it seems like such a long time ago. Yeah. I guess it is. It's 3 years now.
Yeah, I mean, that was a strange period, and especially in that time where we went to like Stockport, I think it was, with no fans. We went to Halifax with
Notts
no
County,
fans.
Yeah.
Notts County with no fans. And when you are actually in them stadiums, it's so bizarre, because they're big stadiums. And even as a fan, like, normally you can never hear anything the players are saying on the pitch. But at times when we was going to them big grounds where it's quite closed in, you could just hear players' voices echoing around the ground. And it was bizarre. It literally just felt like a friendly. But obviously it wasn't played like one, but it felt like a friendly in terms of, like, you can hear everything that's going on, you can see everything, you can pretty much sit where you want. Yeah, it was strange times. But yeah, like I say, it was nice for us on that last game against Notts County. I think, did we draw
1-1? Yeah.
So we drew 1-1 with Notts County that last game of the season, wasn't it, when the fans were in for us. And obviously we all got to have a little bit of celebration.
I know, we beat them, didn't we?
Was it 1-0?
Yeah.
Maybe I was thinking last year was 1-0, wasn't it? Yeah. But yeah, so we had them obviously little celebrations on the pitch, which after that game obviously got us into the playoffs. So then we went to...
Hartlepool,
yeah, which is a tough 22 minutes or 17 minutes either.
Well, I was just going to say, going from having no fans to fans for a couple of games, going to a place like Hartlepool, where football is everything, and having, 4,500 screaming poolies, it was a tough afternoon. Fought back in the second half, but unfortunately not enough, was it?
No, and I remember that day quite well, and I remember doing the warm-up and the crowd starting to build up along the side, and I thought, yeah, this is proper. And I think at that time as well, obviously we had probably a little bit more of an experienced team potentially that you'd say now, but we had a few young players in on loan and stuff like that that were in for them 13 games, and obviously in before obviously Andy come in, and wouldn't have played under fans. And I think we probably got startled a little bit for that first 20 minutes as well of that place was rocking. And like you say, up there, football means a lot to them. I think we got probably stuck a little bit there, but I think we learned on it. Obviously, the following year, obviously we went and played at Wembley in front of 46,000 people. Again, with probably a young team and some young players in there that stood out, and a lot of them now have gone on to bigger and better things.
And during your time here, you talk about that Wembley moment during that season. Mark Cousins, Reece Charles-Cook, Ellery Balcom, three fantastic goalkeepers, and you've had the pleasure of working with a lot of talented goalkeepers in your time here so far, of course, including Teddy Sharman-Lowe and Grant Smith, who are with us now.
Yeah, I think I've been extremely fortunate, and I always look back at Cuzzo and think them first 13 games. I remember when I come in, he was 34 at the time and I was 25, and I remember my first day and I spoke to him and I was like, look, cuz, I'm not going to try and teach you anything new. I'm not going to try and reinvent the wheel. I said, you are what you are. You've probably caught 1,000,000,000 volleys. You probably caught 1,000,000 half volleys. You probably caught 1,000,000 dippers. Like, you've probably been through all of these situations. You've played at levels I would have only dreamed of playing in League One and League Two. So I'm not going to tell you to try and do stuff. But I remember saying to him, I said, look, if there's anything that I feel like we can work on, I won't be shy of saying it, but he was brilliant to work with. He brought into it straight away. I think the way I worked compared to the previous goalkeeper coach was completely different. Not any better or worse for any reason, but I think it was a different type of coaching for Cuz. And thankfully for him, like, I think with an experienced goalkeeper and probably an inexperienced goalkeeper coach, he probably could have sacked it off, or not bullied me, but probably could have been like, actually, Bran, I want to do things this way, do it like this for me. He was brilliant. Like, he really bought into it. And then obviously the following season, we had him and Cookie. So brilliant competition. And then obviously Ellery come in again, brilliant competition, end up getting the shirt. And then Cuzzo's obviously gone off to Ebbsfleet and done fantastic. Obviously won the league last year by quite a way. And then last year, obviously, we had Cookie, we had Longy, we had Tom Smith. So again, great competition. This year, we're sat here with Teddy Sharman-Lowe and Grant Smith. And like I say, I think it's something that we've always been quite big on. Obviously, I love goalkeeping. The gaffer's come from a goalkeeping world, and I think the gaffer was just in here before, and he's always said it. Competition for places is brilliant. And if there's a reason why one of them should be playing or one of them shouldn't be playing, like, we'll make that change. We do what's best for the team. But the good thing that I've loved since I've been here, the goalkeeper group's always been so tight. And I think the guys that were at the game at Kidderminster behind the goal, and they might have seen it, they might not, but I remember when Grant finished the end down behind by the fans, and Teddy was the first person that walked directly over to Grant Smith and congratulate him for the performance he put in. So I think that sort of shows the kind of the group we've got now. That's brilliant. I can't stress how good that is for us on a daily basis to work with. It's easy for a goalkeeper coach, especially someone like Grant who's got so much experience behind him, obviously getting out of this league, getting out of League Two with Lincoln. Josh is smiling now because I've mentioned Lincoln.
Good memories for Josh.
So that experience is, and not only that, like, I'm not daft. Like Grant's had these experiences, and I think sometimes I see them two just talking during the session, and I'll just walk off and start collecting balls because I know that he'll be giving Teddy some of his experiences and sort of trying to coach him through different things as well, and probably vice versa. There's some stuff Teddy can do that Grant can't, or Grant's picked up certain habits of doing it throughout his career, and now he's actually seeing Teddy do stuff, and he's like, actually, I think I can maybe try and do that as well. So, yeah, got good group that all want to learn.
You've obviously known Andy for a long time, but does it help working with a manager who is a goalkeeper, who understands everything about goalkeeping?
Yeah, do you know what? It's really interesting. Everyone I speak to in sort of like the goalkeeping circle, so like other goalkeeper coaches, things like, oh, what's it like working under a manager who obviously used to play in goal? And I went, do you know what? Like, it's still me with the goalkeepers. Andy's not once ever got involved as such with the goalkeepers. Obviously, look, if we're recruiting a goalkeeper, we both watch and we say, look, what do we like? What don't we like? And is there room for them to improve with us? Of course we do. But he kind of stays out of the way. And I remember him. I remember I asked him a couple of things once, and he said, look, to be honest, he said, you're going to be a different coach to what I was. I said, we're in different times as well. But he said, I don't want to sort of stand over you and watch you when you're coaching and things like that and feel like I'm judging you. So he sort of stands more so with probably Danny and the team with the bigger, larger group. But on the flip side, it's always good to lean on him whenever I need to. So in terms of if any goalkeepers are having a dip in their performances and stuff like that, and kind of at this level, like he's played as a full-time goalkeeper, but I haven't. So leaning on him for them sort of things how can I work my goalkeeper through this? So he's going through a hard time with this X, Y, Z. And he can always come up with a good sort of solution, or maybe a different perspective than maybe I'm looking it through. So it's always nice to lean on him on them sorts of things, especially the sort of off-field stuff rather than sort of always on it saying, Gaffer, do you think this? Gaffer, do you think that? It's nice to work under probably someone who appreciates goalkeeping probably more than some.
Moving away from the first team element of it, you talked about your role as head of goalkeeping, and that's seen you work with us in the Community Trust, putting on some brilliant sessions on a Friday evening for goalkeepers, which is when you came in, it was a new provision that we introduced. It's taken off really well, hasn't it? And we're looking forward to getting started again in September.
Yeah, so this is something when I first come in, I wanted to make sure that every goalkeeper at the club, whether it's first team, 21s, 18s, in the academy doing the education programme, the JPL, the youth section, I wanted to make sure every goalkeeper's got at least access to a goalkeeper session a week. And thankfully now we've been able to do that. So obviously I like to work with the 18s and the 21s on a daily basis up with the first team. The JPL, we have Ryan McCourt, who's come through our academy as a goalkeeper, now plays at Step 6 with Elmstead. Does a bit of coaching for us and obviously works with yourself in the community, Matt. And now, obviously, we've opened up the Friday night stuff, and it's a great opportunity for all of our youth goalkeepers that are part of the club already to come down and get a session. And then not only that, we've sort of opened it up to the public, which, like we said, it's sort of something that took off massively when we first did it. It probably actually grew too big too quick. I think we'd agree. I think we both thought that when we sat around the table, I think we thought that, yeah, we'd probably get maybe 15 or 20. And there were some weeks where we was booking on and I was like, thinking there's 50 goalkeepers here. And I was like, wow. It's been something that we've making. And I think this year we're probably in a place now where I'm comfortable with enough coaches. We start back on September the 8th and it's open for all age groups, really, from 6. Did we start at 6 all the way to 16? Hopefully we'll see some new goalkeepers, some of the ones that have been coming through. And then, like I say, hopefully we might have our next sort of Grant Smith or Reece Charles Cook or Mark Cousins or Teddy or someone through that group. It's nice to see them little ones as well. Like I say, I do my stuff at Arsenal, but it's nice to get the balance, really. I work with someone in Grant who's 30, and then sometimes you find me down there on a Friday night and I'm coaching 6-7-year-olds. It's nice to get a bit of perspective.
And hopefully we can get Grant and Teddy to come down and visit the session sometime.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have a few games based in training and we'll get the loser to come down a few times. But yeah, no doubt they'll both come down. I mean, Grant's only down the road now with us, and he's bought in massively. I think his daughter today was doing the community,
wasn't she?
So she was out on the pitch running about, chasing footballs. So yeah, definitely that they'll come down, and then like I say, hopefully we can get a few other guests down and some high profile names, and try and build up a good little goalkeeping school.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant, Brandon. Thanks so much for your time. It's been great and really insightful catching up with you, and hopefully everybody enjoyed that. I know we certainly did. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, Matt. Thank you. Cheers, Josh.
That was a really good interview.
Yes, it was,
really
wasn't
interesting
it?
Story.
And again, someone who sits in the hot seat and just opens up.
Yeah, no, it's good. I do like Brandon. He's a good guy. But we didn't mention in his interview, and do you know what? I'm going to mention it. I know people have seen it on social media and stuff, but he scored an absolute worldie in training.
Not that he's posted it anywhere at all on social media.
No, I mean, he's a humble guy. He wants to keep it close to
That's
him.
Right, yeah. Just internal. No one else has seen it.
But to be fair, Matt, if we scored a goal like that in training.
Well, it was a good strike.
It was.
I'll give it that. But yeah, thank you to Brandon for his time. And if you'd like to find out more about our goalkeeping sessions, you can visit BromleyFC.org. And thank you again to Brandon for such an in-depth chat. It was a really, really enjoyable one as well. Right, moving on to outfield matters, I should say, but staying with the men's team. George Alexander is, of course, a loanee at the moment, out on loan at Slough Town, where he enjoyed a very successful period towards the end of last season. And it's fair to say, after a difficult opening couple of games for Slough, they very much hit form again in their last fixture. George Alexander with another hat-trick. Although, I hear they tried to take one of the goals away from him as an own goal, but it was then credited on Monday morning and confirmed as credited to George Alexander, so he can keep that match ball.
Yeah, there was a camera behind the goal. So, have you seen it, the goal that they're debating?
I haven't, no.
There's an angle. I don't know if a supporter filmed it or if it was one of the clubs, but there's a camera right behind the goal, and the ball sort of goes across goal, and I think George and the defender both stick their feet out, and it goes in.
Dubious goals
tell.
Panel.
I couldn't tell, but obviously being biased, that's his hat-trick.
Do you remember when we had this before, Barnet away with Michael Cheek and Omar Shomi last year?
Yeah.
And I was getting texts from both of them on my way home saying, no, it was my goal. How is he claiming it? Yeah. No, it's definitely my goal. And I can't remember what we decided in the end. I think it went down as Cheek's goal, didn't it? Yeah. I think you were Camp Omar that day.
I was, yeah. I thought it was Omar's goal. But
well, it was credited to Cheek, I think, in the end. Yeah. But anyway, moving on.
You can't take that away from George, though.
Of course you can't. Well done to George. And honestly, keep smashing it, my friend.
Yeah.
He was a great interview on the podcast a few weeks back. And he's a very determined young man who I know will make a success of himself. Well done, George. Keep up the good form.
That's three hat-tricks, isn't it, in the National League
South? I think it is, yes. Welling and Slough twice. Incredible. Well done to him.
So good.
Moving on then to the women's game. And unfortunately, the Bromley women's fixture on Sunday was postponed. However, the Bromley women team, the Bromley Bells, and so many members of the community, hundreds of people in Broomfield's Bar and Kitchen, enjoying the Lionesses' final against Spain. And I watched it, and I was absolutely gutted for the Lionesses. Unfortunately, Spain coming away with the victory, and well done to them. Just wasn't to be, but after a great tournament, it's an incredible achievement for Serena Wiegmann's side to reach the final, having won the Euros just last year. So future is very much bright for the women's game in English football, and of course here at Bromley Football Club as well. We've really been promoting women and girls activity for several years now, and us as a community trust have really pioneered that in terms of what we've done with Andrea and Bromley Bells and everything else that we've got going on, Wildcats and Squad and women's walking football now. And of course Andrea was out there enjoying the tournament and was gutted at that final result, but still I think, Josh, a real moment to reflect and be proud of that team.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's more, inspiring young girls and women to play football. And I think Andrea said in the office that more people have signed up for Bromley Bells, haven't they?
So they have, yeah.
Obviously, they've been parading the flag around Australia that has Bromley Bells on it. And, it's getting the word out, getting more more women and girls involved, and Andrea's doing a good job here by taking that on.
Absolutely. And well, we hope Andrea, we know Andrea enjoyed her trip, and what a place to go and see football played in all of those fantastic stadiums. And apart from the final, a really successful tournament for England, and well done to the Lionesses. We're certainly very, very proud of them. We look forward to seeing all of their future successes. Well, we've kind of hit it already, but it's time for, hang on, Community Corner. There we go.
Beautiful.
I hope that was worth the wait, everyone. Community Corner, well, what a 5 weeks it's been. We've had our summer soccer camps throughout the past 5 weeks, and I just went through the numbers earlier this week, and across that 5 weeks, we've welcomed over 1,000 children to our summer soccer camps, which is absolutely incredible. And of course, to add to that, we've had our girls-only camps, which has really invested nicely in the buzz of the Lionesses tournament that we were just talking about a moment ago, and our half camps as well, where we've worked with children on free school meals, providing them with a hot, nutritious meal, providing them with an educational session, and also a football session as well, which was really, really good fun. Well done to all the coaches. They're all coming down to Broomfields for the Beanbag tomorrow night for a little celebratory drink as a thank you for their hard work. And yeah, absolutely brilliant few weeks. Now we look ahead to our autumn term of activities, and if you have a young child between the ages of 4 and 15, you can sign up for our soccer schools. If you've got one that is younger, you can sign up for our Mini Ravens, which is our session for 18 months to just under 4 years old, and then from 4 years old upwards, you progress through to the soccer school. And we're offering term passes for that, where if you have a block booking, you can get free sessions free of charge. And of course, for those of you that are unable to commit to a block booking, you can book sessions on an individual weekly basis. Check out the website for more information on that, bromleyfc.org, and we hope to see some of you down at those sessions. Right, moving on, we've kind of touched on it already. The legend is back, as he is every week.
Yeah.
When he comes in the room, I stand up and I just vacate this seat. And I just, yeah, this is his seat. This is his time to shine.
Carry on.
I've lost the plot. I think I've lost the plot.
I could tell. I was like, what are you actually talking about?
Roy is a legend.
Yeah.
We stand when he comes into the room.
Yeah,
he is royalty. He is Bromley royalty.
But these intros are getting longer and longer.
They are getting longer. It's because I'm running out of superlatives to describe Roy Oliver, to be honest. But anyway, here is the man, the myth, the legend, Roy Oliver. Roy, welcome back for another instalment of Roy Remembers. It's great to have you on the podcast again. Just before we get started, we'd like to ask you your thoughts on the previous game. And we said, along with Andy Woodman, the game had pretty much everything other than a goal. What was your take on Saturday's draw at Kidderminster?
I thought it was a good, very good point in the end. I thought we battled really well. I mean, after getting a guy sent off, we sort of hampered us, and then Wasnay going off injured early in the game as well, and then the new guy coming on. But I think the team battled well, and I think we were well worthy of a point in the end. They were throwing bodies in the way in the first half, you know, blocks. The keeper had a great game, you know. I mean, they threw the kitchen sink at him, but he got in the way of it, and the defenders did brilliantly by throwing their bodies in the way and everything.
And it looked like good fun in the away end. Did you have a good afternoon?
Oh yeah, we always have a good afternoon. It's the fun of being at a game, and if you ask any supporter of any football team, they'll all say one thing: if your team is committed out there and battles all the way to the end of the game, you're happy, irrespective of the result. It's when your team turn up and basically don't care, that's when supporters get annoyed. But I think it's only happened probably a couple of times all the years for a long time that I've been watching Bromley that's happened. But yeah, great game, and we had a lot of good fun there, as usual.
Well, it did look fun from where I was sat, that's for sure. Anyway, on to Roy Remembers. Mm-hmm. And what have you got for us this week? As I always say, the floor's yours.
Yeah. So this week is it's our first ever Kent Senior Cup win, which was 1950. And we played Gillingham, and the first game was played at Maidstone. I think the gate was probably about 10,000 there. A big crowd there at the old Maidstone ground. And it was 1-1, and we got a battering in the set. We got a lead, but second half they gave us a real battering. So it went to a replay at Priestfield. And this, you've got to remember that this was the year that Gillingham got back into the Football League, because they were in it in 1937-38, but it got removed in favour of Ipswich Town. And then in sort of late 40s, they decided to increase the league. So Gillingham got back in. So they were a professional outfit. So we were a top amateur team and they were a professional team. So the game was played at Priestfield and we won 5-3. George Brown scored a hat-trick and they scored two own goals as well. So the scores went Bromley 1, them nil. Bromley 1, them 1-1. And then we took the lead 2-1, then it was 2-2. Then we took 3-2 ahead and it was 3-3. And then we got 4-1, then we got the 5th-1. So we 5-3. So, yeah, if you read the report, it was a great game. I say 18,000 there at Priestfield. Good gate.
Wow, that's an incredible attendance. Yeah. And also what we call a cup set, I guess.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so they were a professional outfit and we were top non-league clubbers, you know, in them days, so many amateur internationals. I've got one little footnote from Bromley played Leytonstone in the semi-final of the Amateur Cup in 1948-49. First game was at Highbury and a replay was at Stamford Bridge and we won. So Leytonstone won the Cup in 47-48, so they were going for a hat-trick. So with that, when we beat them in the semi-final, a Bromley supporter made a little coffin with 11 stones in it and sent it to Leytonstone as a memorial that we beat them. And a year later, the guy at Leytonstone sent the coffin back to Bromley with regards, with best wishes. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The things that used to happen.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this happening nowadays?
Yeah. Back on its home ground, yeah, there's a little report here about Bromley supporter made a little coffin and put 11 little stones in it and then sent it to Leytonstone.
Incredible.
We beat them, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Roy, it's always so great to hear all of these fantastic stories that you've got. And you were sat in Raven's Chat today with Mark Andrews, who brought his laptop, looking through all sorts of things. It never stops for you, does it?
No. We're just fascinated. So John Self came up with a couple of matches that he couldn't find details of. One was a date and one was we played... The book has got, we played Charlton Athletic in it was a press fund in 1922-23, but we didn't. They paid it in 1927 and Charlton won 8-1.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Not such a good result that day.
Not such a good result, no. So we'll find that, things like that as well, you know, it's... I've got, like, we've won Lewis Memorial Cups, we've won the Hastings Memorial Cup. 2 years running in the 50s. So I've got programmed, of course. So,
Wow.
And of course, this week I've been in a real situation. I couldn't find free programs.
Oh, no.
So we played Slough United, they were called, after the war. And you'll find the rhyme in the book, actually, in the Centenary book. And they played at Bromley, and it's called Coming to Bromley by Bus, and everything happened. So you read it, it's in the Centenary book. So everything happened on the journey, and they broke down, and they got people in the cars to get to the ground. Eventually the game started, and the supporters did arrive on time, but the game got called off with about not long to go because the fog came down. And Bromley winning 1-0. So that was the 17th of November. They had to come back on the 21st and Bromley whacked them 6-1. And then we play. In them days, the FA Cup was played on two legs. So it wasn't just you played them home and you played them away. So we went to Slough a few days later and we won 1-0 up there. So I couldn't find these programmes. I've been taking the room apart, literally.
Any joy yet?
I found them.
You have?
Yeah, I did find them.
Yes. All is good.
What had happened is in the top drawer of my fire, Jenny put a lot of stuff in there. I put it in there. And as I've closed the door, they've gone over the back and down the back of the filing cabinet. So I took everything out of the drawers and were folders and everything, put them on the bed and on the floor and all that. And I couldn't take the filing cabinet out, so I could see in the back there was quite a bit of stuff. So I took everything off the filing cabinet, moved it out, got everything out, and then amongst it was the programmes I'm looking for.
All is well. Ends well.
All is well.
And just before we finish, I just wanted to touch on something and someone that a lot of people know, or who a lot of people know at Bromley, and that's Jim Brown. And you very kindly give up your time to look after Jim Brown on a match day. First of all, how is Jim? And it's been great to see him start to be able to come back and enjoy the matches now.
Yeah, I mean, he looked sort of coming out. He would have come today, but he had a hospital appointment, so he couldn't make it today. He had one yesterday at Lewisham Hospital, and he had one today, I think, at Farnborough. So they're always ongoing as well. But he enjoys coming down to Ravens chat, and obviously he enjoys coming down to the game night and being up there with Matt doing the commentary as well. Yeah, so he really enjoys it. So. And we've been invited to Caroline to have a meal up there on the 21st of October. We're
at home
to Oxford City.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure to share the press area with two legends. No, I'm not talking about Dan Bentley and Josh Tindall. Yeah. I'm talking about Roy Oliver and Jim Brown. Josh is laughing at me now. But in all seriousness, it's a pleasure to see you both up there. And he's a good view for Jim from there, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. I mean, I say Jim's been a supporter for many, many years. And he really enjoys coming down. And you look after someone as a friend. You don't look to get... He says thank you, and that is good enough for me.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Roy, thank you so much for joining us again today. And we look forward to whatever you've got for us next week.
I'll dig something out.
I'm sure you will. Thanks, Roy.
Matt, we've got a game Friday night.
It's unfamiliar, isn't it? Unfamiliar territory, Friday night game.
It is.
And, of course, that is the trip to Rochdale, who've had a little bit of a mixed opening to their four games, or their opening to their season so far, in terms of their four results. They started off the season with a 1-0 defeat against Ebbsfleet United, which was, of course, on the TNT Sports channel. They then beat Oxford City by a 1-0 before losing out 3-2 at Woking and then returning to winning ways with a 2-0 victory at home to Eastleigh. So, a little bit Jekyll and Hyde there. I wonder what sort of opponent we'll come up against tomorrow night in terms of... how they're going to play. It's a bit of a new challenge for us. Bromley supporters might remember the ground from our FA Cup match there a few years back. They currently occupy 10th in the table with, of course, 6 points from their opening four games. Josh, it's another big ground. And, we always say it, another tough place to go where the supporters will be right behind their team and in good number as well.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of when we went to Notts County last season. And I think before that, results dipped a little bit and we went there and it was a really good performance, came away with a draw. I don't know. I think the way results have gone for us so far, obviously we'd like to come away with a win, but, you know, Rochdale have, one of the teams that have come down from League Two, so it'll be a tough one.
Well, after that, and of course, we mentioned earlier the beanback. If you can't get to the game, do join us in Brimfield's Bar and Kitchen. Open from 4 o'clock on Friday nights. Come along and enjoy the game. The chairman and the CEO will be there for fans to chat to as well.
And Ravens Weekly host Matt Hall will also be there.
And Josh Tindall.
We will be there.
So, unfortunately, as Josh has mentioned there, that does mean we will not be present at the fixture. So, unfortunately, on this rare occasion, there will be no live commentary of the fixture from a Bromley perspective for the Rochdale game. And we do apologise for any inconvenience caused there. Moving on then. And we are back at home, aren't we, the following Monday for the bank holiday fixture.
It's going to feel like a Saturday, isn't it?
It is going to feel like a Saturday.
We're going to wake up the next morning.
The next morning.
Morning thinking, oh, nice, Sunday morning. But it's not, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday and it's back to work. It's going to be weird. That's right. Absolutely. And also what's weird is, of course, an unfortunate Southend's current financial situation, which is really tough for the fans and the players and the staff behind the scenes, who, of course, we all send our very best wishes to. That hasn't stopped them from starting their season in good fashion. They beat Oldham Athletic 4-0 on the opening day before a 2-0 victory away to Dagenham Redbridge. However, they have lost their last two games, 2-1 to Dorking Wanderers and 3-2 to Hartlepool United. Now, that aside, they did have a 10-point deduction applied, which means they are currently at the bottom of the table, despite those two victories, on minus 4 points. It's going to be an atmosphere on Monday. It's going to be hopefully a very good crowd. Lots of Southend fans making the trip as well. And Josh, hopefully that all makes for a good game of football and an entertaining watch.
Yeah, well, despite everything that's going on, Southend have sold out their away end. So from there... From their side, it'll be, they're still backing their team and, you know, getting behind the lads. So it should be a good atmosphere on Monday. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they do on Saturday against, it's Easley, isn't it, that they're playing, yeah. So it'll be interesting. So obviously the players going into that, I think they're on minus 4 points, aren't they?
Yes, they
are. So, yeah, it'll be interesting if that's knocked them a little bit, and obviously the uncertainty as well surrounding their position in the league, and you know we don't know what's gonna happen with them. So
no, but seriously, best of luck. You never like to see another club in that position. So aside from on the pitch on Monday, best of luck to them.
And it's becoming a regular thing, and we sad, don't see it. So
sad. But anyway, all the very best. Apart from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock. On Monday on the pitch, but we look forward to that game in all seriousness. Someone else who's looking forward to that is Andy Woodman. We caught up with him as we do on the podcast, and here's what Andy had to say this week. Andy, you're back again. Thank you for joining us once more. Let's just talk about then the one game we've had since we last spoke, which was away to Kidderminster.
Four games in that one game.
We said it, didn't we, at full time. It had pretty much everything other than a goal.
Which I was quite happy about. To be honest, look, it was up until the sending off, we was looking quite comfortable away from home, and it's easy to say that, of course, but let's talk before the sending off. We had the bad injury to Sol Kadar, which was a real blow because we had to then make a substitution. So that was the first sort of kick in the teeth, because he looked sharp, so he looked like he was going to cause some problems. He's picked up a lengthy injury, which is a real shame for the young man. But I mean, what a tale of fortunes in 1 week of football he's had. But he'll come back stronger, and he'll be good. So I've got no worries about Sol long term. He's just he's just got to get himself fit and go for this lengthy process now. And then we had the sending off, which in the modern day you can't push people, you can't do anything, and then it completely changed the complex of the game and how we had to go about things, and we was reliant on our goalkeeper literally straight after the sending off. He made three fantastic saves, you know, just when you need him to make him, you know, because you're all a little bit at sea and your, you know, emotions are a little bit high on the pitch. And then after that, I felt we'd done what we've done many times. We got our shape right. We still looked a little bit of a threat up the top, but not a lot. Obviously, with 10 men, and then sort of defended the box and the goal mouth really well. Loads of balls coming in the box, loads of crosses, loads of nearlies, but the guys were resolute and they defended really well. And I think we've got to look at that as a tough day for many reasons, but a real good clean sheet and a point gained on the road. By rights, it should have been easily lost.
Looking back at the previous couple of games, we saw glimpses of saves that Grant Smith made, but perhaps he really justified then just why you signed him and justified his ability.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, for me, it was always very important for us to have two number one goalies in this in the club this season. Myself and the chairman have spoken about that. We wanted competition for places. As it turns out, both goalies have had little niggling injuries, so they've sort of alternated with the shirt. And Grant come in Saturday. I mean, he was excellent. He'd done what we've seen him do many a times to us when we played against him. So he made some big saves the weekend, and he's a real, you know, just a get some of his job sort of character and experienced campaigner. So yeah, he was excellent. Really chuffed.
And looking at the defence, you commented on the day that particularly after the sending off, they had to step up, and they did. And particularly pleasing, I guess, for Chinnacolli, who got named in the National League Team of the Week.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I make no secret of it. For me, Chin's a good player. And I think when that ball comes in the box, that's when we see him come into his own. And at halftime, I felt it was this was his growing up all of a sudden overnight from going to play 23s football. Where the results, not the be-all and end-all, it's all about the development, so they keep telling me. So now, look, this is about earning the right and earning the point and or the win if you can get it, and making sure that you're resolute. And I said to him at half-time, today's the day you become a man in football, not an under-23s player no more. And I threw down a challenge, and he accepted it, and he'd done terrific. And look, it helps when you've got an experienced player beside you and a captain like Webster as well. So that always helps. So, yeah, he was excellent, Chin.
And it wasn't pretty on Saturday, but you talked about that determination.
We don't want pretty, Matt. We just want points. We don't want pretty.
You talked about that determination, exactly that. You talked about the doggedness and the grittiness of that performance and kind of memories of a lot of performances last season there.
Yeah, I mean, look... kind of know where we're at the moment. And certain things have gone against us, but they do for everyone over the course of the season. So we just have to get on with it. What I really want to see is a team that can get clean sheets and grind out results, because that will carry you a lot further than a team that's flaky and has one good performance and then flaky and no real substance about them. And we've got a group of players that have got a bit of substance about them. And we're getting a few back from injury now, so that helps. But yeah, there just seems to be one or two bumps in the road at the moment, which we're experiencing, and probably experiencing for the first time since I've really been here. And I don't mean results-wise. I just mean situations that have occurred with injuries and suspensions and bits and bobs. They've all come at sort of there's never a good time, but all at the same time. So that's been a little bit a bit of upheaval, but. Like I say, you know, I think it gives other people a chance to jump in and grab the shirt, which at the moment Ben Krauthaus has jumped on.
Some big news this week, and one that will perhaps come as a shock to a few people, and that is that Billy Bingham has stepped away from full-time professional football with immediate effect, which is it's obviously a loss to the team.
Yes. Look, I don't mind. I've spoken to Billy at length for since I've been here. And I think I should make it really public now, for the sake of Billy as well. When I first come to the football club, Billy didn't want to play football no more. He'd had enough. And he really had given up. And that was when I first walked in the door. This guy that I'd heard so much about, his talent, wanted to give up. He just had enough of football. And there's a bit of me that can't understand that. And there's a bit of me that kind of does get it. It does get you sometimes. But, you know, certain characters react differently. And I managed to get Billy enjoying football again, which I was really chuffed about, because, you know, he's a good player, Billy. We know that. We don't need telling. So it sort of got him back enjoying his football, and then we got him playing, and I could see Billy was back to where he, you know, was slightly enjoying it again. But Billy's always made it no secret. He's not in love with football. He's not in love with the game. As good a player he is, I think it finds sometimes a bit of a drain on him. So, you know, last season he was having these emotions. They were coming back again. I kept trying to keep him positive, but it was different this time. He come and see me and said, look, I want to call it a day. I don't want to play professional football no more. So I did try and speak to him and say, look, it's just probably a little phase you're going through, but it was a completely different conversation this time for Billy. And he's at a crossroads in his life where, you know, he's probably thinking life after football. And, you know, we have to respect the sort of position that these boys are in at this level. They're not on millions of pounds and they've got to think about what the next step is. So we had a long chat and he wanted to call it a day there and then. It was on our terms. We decided to terminate his contract. There's no, you know, before anyone starts saying there's no fallout, there's no ill feeling, there's no other agenda other than Billy doesn't want to play full-time football no more. He's done with football, which is really, I mean, I can see your faces. It's really sad. But we have to respect that. And we have to respect people's mental state with what comes with being a professional footballer that not everyone gets. So we've done it for his own welfare as well. And we wish him well on his journey. I hope it's not something he's going to regret later on in life. I think it will be, I'll be honest with you, because I've always said play as long as you can, and Byron Webster's an example of that. But we have to wish him well and look for his next, what he's going to do next in his next chapter of his life. I think he's got some exams he's passed. He's been doing, you know, work away from here in the financial world. So maybe that will be where he makes a transition to go in his next chapter of his life. But certainly from myself and the chairman, you know, we'd like to thank him for everything he's done. And it was really nice because he actually thanked me for, you know, for giving him another 2 or 3 years of enjoying football. And he sort of touched me a little bit. He was saying, you know, give me an experience at Wembley that if I'd give up when you first come, I would never have had that. So that was nice. It didn't make me feel much better, but, you know, it's nice that there's a mutual respect for himself and Billy, and I understand slightly, you know, what he's going through.
Well, just echoing those thoughts, Andy, we wish Billy all the very best and thank him for his contribution over the past 4 years. Moving on then, and it's a busy, well, bank holiday period in the unfamiliar position of playing on a Friday night as well at Rochdale.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different, isn't it? But I think I'll let you know on Saturday whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. I think, look, from our point of view, the opportunity come from Rochdale asking if we wanted to play on the Friday night. And I felt that it would give us an extra day's recovery into the Monday game. We're going to get back late. You know, it's going to be a long journey. It gives us another day. We can get up there and prepare and hopefully give a good account of ourselves and get our first win on the board. You know, look, we're not going up there just to give a good account. We've got to start winning some football matches at this football club, and that's what we're drilled to do, and that's exactly where I'm at.
And just because we won't catch up with you before that point, but of course I know you look at it one game at a time, but just briefly touching on Monday, obviously Southend aside that are in the news a lot at the moment for unfortunate reasons, but actually have started the season pretty well.
Look, Southend are a big club. Forget all their off-the-pitch problems, which have been going on since I was there, I think, when I was there as a player, which is a long time ago. Southend is a big club in this division. So I don't think we should be shocked about Southend being at the top of the table, the top end of the table, and being a good team. They signed a huge amount of players before they had the embargo lifted. So they've got, you know, let's not get carried away. And they'll be coming to town with a well-supported crowd and all of that. So that'd be a tough game. I quite often enjoy the so-called tougher games, as everyone calls them. We're not Southend. We're a smaller club. I keep reminding everyone of that. And we'll go out and give an account of ourselves. And you know, I must be clear with everybody. This is, what, we're 4 games in? It's so early. You know, we've got a lot of football to be playing. And we've got to make sure we just keep concentrating now. We've had two draws, unbeaten in two. Not unbeaten like I'd like to be unbeaten, but we have to build the blocks again. And remember I said when I first come here, we have to keep making these building blocks of getting better every time we get out on the pitch and starting getting that confidence throughout the group. And that trust, and I saw that trust in abundance at Kidderminster.
Well, Andy, we look forward to those 2 games. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll catch you after.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to Andy, as always, for his time and his honesty. It's always great to hear his reflection on things across the week. Now, just before we finish, a shout out to our fantastic Exec Club. We've still got a brilliant offer for the next two games in the Executive Club. That's for Southend United on Monday, the 28th of August, and Maidenhead United on the 9th of September, which is my birthday. Yippee. And also, more importantly, we're on TNT Sports.
Take the mic on at half time. You know how you do birthday shout outs to other people.
I can't imagine you doing that.
I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it.
I'm going
to
do it.
Do you even know how to use that microphone?
Yes. It's got an on button. Hold it down. Happy days.
You've got to time it, Josh.
We've done the little public address system test. You've got to feel.
You have helped me with public address system test. Yeah, that's correct. But anyway, that's on TNT Sports, remember. But do come down and see the real thing here at the Relocating Community Stadium. The offer in Exec Club is just £40 per person and £20 per child for those two games. It's a fantastic offer and a brilliant opportunity to experience our wonderful and highly rated hospitality at a discounted price. For more information on that, you can email execclub@bromleyfc.co.uk. And yeah, we hope to see you up there. Just before we finish, a reminder of the Beanback on Friday night. Rochdale versus Bromley. Join us in Broomfield's Bar and Kitchen. And, oh, I've got to give somebody a shout-out before we finish.
Yeah.
Paul Richer, who I know will be listening to this podcast, came in my car to the Kidderminster game. I gave him a lift up there. And Paul used to be a DJ, relived his DJing days. We had Heart 80s on the whole way.
Pink Sunshine.
With Pink Sunshine, yeah. Feeling hot, hot, hot.
Oh, tune.
Pink Sunshine's my favourite, definitely.
Do you know what? No, I'm not going to talk about it. Going on.
Anyway, Clint's the photographer and Dan Bentley, the co-commentator, were in the back. And it was just a great day out. So thanks for joining us, Paul, for that one. And I know you'll be listening to this
actually,
podcast.
Actually, it's relevant because he used to play for Gills.
Go on.
The Lincoln fans used to sing Billy Knot, Knot, Knot. Do you remember Billy Knot?
I do. I do remember him.
Good player.
He's playing in the non-leagues now, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Wow. Very good player.
Billy Knot, Knot.
Remember him playing for Lincoln against Bromley.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He scored, didn't he? I think he scored.
He might have done.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did.
He might have done.
I'm going to Google it now while you finish off.
You're going to Google it now? I was just about to literally finish it off now. I'm not sure he did, you know. But anyway, thank you to Josh, who is still Googling.
There we go. Billy Knott's first goal for Lincoln. There we go.
When? What
year? That was a good link. It was 2017.
I was there, I think. Anyway, thank you, Josh, for joining me. Thank you to everybody for listening and for putting up with me and Josh and our antics throughout this podcast.
It is half six.
It is,
in fairness.
It's getting a little late. Yeah,
we are just, you know.
Well, that's it now. We're off home. Thank you very much for your support. And we hope to see you on Monday as we take on Southend United. Or if not before that, at the Beanback on Friday evening. And of course, the under-21s fixture against Aldershot as well. Take care, everyone. And we'll be back with you next week.
Brom.
You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town.